And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. And Buck, man, we've got a chance to have, I'd say, one of the best guests we've ever had on here back again. The first time we had a chat with Luke Kuechly was phenomenal, and I think this one's going to be better.
Yeah, I think this is one of the best conversations that we will have with a former player who really has a great perspective on the game. Luke Kuechly, obviously, with three-time defense player of the year, two-time defense player of the year for sure. But you talk about a guy who understands how to play the game, understands the ins and outs of the game. To have a conversation with him about the nuances of the game is a fantastic one.
Yeah, he was the NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 2013. He was the Rookie of the Year in 2012. Seven-time Pro Bowler, five-time first-team All-Pro. So not too shabby of a career there for Luke Kuechly, and really one of the most cerebral players you'll ever talk to. So it's awesome we get a chance to visit with him. I did do a little homework just before we get to that interview, Buck, because last time we talked to Luke, he brought up the fact that I said, what stat matters to you as a linebacker? Like, what are you into? And he said tackles for loss for off-the-ball linebackers was always telling. Mm-hmm. So in looking that up, there's a rookie that's leading the league right now in tackles for loss from off the ball. It's actually Nick Bolton for the Kansas City Chiefs. So having a phenomenal year there in Kansas City, 11 tackles for loss as an off the ball linebacker, followed by DeMario Davis, who's been doing it a long time. He's got 10. Matt Milano's got 9. You've got Roquan Smith with 8. And then you've got three guys tied with 7. Deion Jones, Quincy Williams, who was picked up by the Jets after the Jags didn't want him any longer. And then Patrick Queen. Patrick Queen gets a lot of heat for what he does in coverage, but clearly making some things happen against the run on the other side of the line of scrimmage. So I thought it was a fascinating point that he brought up about tackles for loss for off the ball linebackers.
Well, I think it's even more fascinating when you think about Nick Bolton and the draft, you know, and some of the concerns, be it with the size or speed or with any of that stuff. But then when you watched him on tape at Missouri, he made a ton of plays. And so it's just another lesson. Like, look, man, trust what your eyes see. Like, guys who kind of find the ball in college have a tendency to find the ball in the pros. And he has quickly become an impact playmaker for the Kansas City Chiefs on the defense.
Yeah, well, we're going to have a fantastic conversation coming up here with Luke Kuechly, one of the best defensive players we've seen in the last 25 years in the NFL, just phenomenal. And again, you're going to appreciate the intelligence that he brings to the sport as well. You're going to love this conversation. We're going to roll that right after this. All right, Buck, so excited to have Luke back with us. Luke, appreciate the time, man. I guess, first of all, just what you've been up to since we last caught up to you.
Yeah, so I've always enjoyed the outdoors. I love to fish. I love to hunt. And when I was playing, you know, the fall is a lot of times the best time to do all that stuff. So I've been on a few trips. I've been on a couple trips with my dad, a couple buddies. I'm going on a trip with my cousin the next 2 weeks. So I've been out. I've been Kansas, Montana, down to Texas, and then we're going to head to South Dakota here the first week of December. So I've been staying busy with that, something I've always wanted to do. I miss the game, but this has been a cool opportunity for me to do something in the fall that I otherwise haven't been able to do.
Okay, so how are you getting your football fixed, though? Like, how are you keeping up with it? What are you doing to stay on top of it? Because I know you can't be away from it for that long.
I still watch it. I still follow the guys in Carolina. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, Monday night football is always easy to watch. Sunday night football is always easy to watch. By the time a lot of these trips, you know, you leave midweek, you get back Sunday. So Sunday night football has always been easy to watch. A lot of times I fly a lot of times on American Airlines, and they have that little media thing you can pull up on your iPad. And a lot of times it's been a lot of Fox games have been on. I think it was the first or second week of the season, I flipped on the Fox game. And I heard a voice, and I had never heard that voice before. I'd heard that voice before, and I was like, "Oh, it was Greg Olsen. Greg was doing the Tampa game. I think there was Tampa Atlanta." So I flipped it on. I'm like, "Wow, that voice is really familiar." He said a couple of things that I'd known to Greg say before, and it was fun to watch the game. He's been really fun to listen to. I think he's really enjoying it.
Yeah, he's doing an awesome job. I'll tell you, one of your other former teammates is now back home again with Cam Newton back in Carolina. Yeah, what was your take on that and the energy and juice he seems to have brought to that team?
I love Cam. I mean, he's so fun to be around, the energy that he has, the love of the game he has, his ability to compete. I think that's one of the most underrated things about Cam is his competition level and his want to win and how hard he works. And I think he's just really proud to be back in Carolina. I saw him about 2 weeks ago, right when he got back, and he was grinning from ear to ear, how he always does. I think he, you know, he's excited to be back, and obviously he's just excited to be playing football again. So to have the opportunity to kind of come back to Carolina after being in New England last year, I think he's excited. He's pumped. And I know that that stadium was rocking when he came back this week. He had a couple vintage camp plays on that long touchdown run, and then he went to the middle of the field and put the ball down and did the Superman. So it was the energy that he brings, I think, is unmatchable.
You know, Luke, now that you've been away from the game for a little over a year, like, the game is always evolving and changing. From a defensive standpoint, what are some of the things that you notice are a little different from the time when you were playing? Is there a trend or anything that you've been able to spot or identify?
Well, I think when I first got in, it was a lot of, you know, a lot, you're in base a lot. So 21-12, gap scheme runs, power football, lead, like ISO lead plays in the B gap on over fronts to the will. And as the game, as my time in the NFL progressed, it switched over to, you know, spread them out, wide zones, zoom sweeps with McVay and Shanahan and all those guys doing that now. And honestly, I think the beginning of my career, I came in at the right time for how I played. I loved, you know, run fits. I loved gap scheme runs because it was really pretty straightforward. It's like, this guy is going to be the guy that blocks me. If I can beat him, I'll make a play on the ball every time. Versus the wide zone, the ball is going to hit wherever there's a crease, wherever there's a seam, whether, you know, the three technique gets cut out or I get reached in the B gap. It's, the game's changed more from 21-12 and kind of pounding the ball and heavy play action to spread it out, wide zone, boots, and then shots down the field. So to me, I think I was very fortunate to get in when I did, because I think my game was more predicated towards that gap scheme, play action, not as much spread them out as they're doing now.
Yeah, I wonder though if everything's just kind of cyclical. It all ends up coming back around, because I was thinking about New England and was getting ready for them when they were playing the Chargers a couple weeks back. They have a lot of two back runs, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, so like you said, the rest of the league's kind of gone to that Shanahan, the wide zone. It looks like the New England Patriots are kind of trying to get ahead of the curve as it comes all the way back around again.
Well, I think they're very confident in what they do in New England. I think they believe in what they do, and they get guys on their roster that they know will fit. They don't get a guy that is super talented and really good, but he doesn't fit what they do. They want to find, from the outside looking in, I feel like they find guys that they have a distinct role for him. I'm going to bring this guy in. He's going to be a fullback for us, and he's going to block lead plays. He's going to block power. He's going to play on special teams. And I think that's one thing they do really well. They know what they are, and they know what kind of player they need.
You know, and thinking about that, there's been a lot of conversation about their defense. And I know you never played in their defense and their scheme, but when you watch it from afar, what is it about what the Patriots do that confounds so many offenses? Because it always appears that their defense is always one of the best, particularly down in the red zone.
Especially against young quarterbacks, too. Yeah. Luke, I mean, this team eats up young quarterbacks. They've been doing it for 20 years.
Well, I think Belichick does a fantastic job on the defensive side of the ball. But I also think, you know, talking to guys that I've played with from New England, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I think they're coached extremely well. I think they're very multiple with their fronts. I think they draft guys that fit. You look at, you know, Dante Hightower and even Kyle Van Noy. They can play off the ball. They can play on the edge. They can rush. They can drop. They can cover. And I think they do a really good job finding defensive backs that fit that scheme. You know, they went out and got, you know, Tlaib. They paid Gilmore. J.C. Jackson's a stud. You know, they McCourty's in the back. They have smart guys that understand the game, and they're coached extremely well. And everybody just does their job. I think football is simple at the end of the day when you just line up, do what your job is, and believe in what your coach. And that defense is always good. Sometimes I think early in the season they get some new guys in there, but at the end of the season they're rolling. And I think that's kind of where they're at right now, especially the last few weeks.
Hold on, DJ, let me ask a question about this, because I heard you say it twice. You talk about their coach really, really well. Luke, in your estimation, what is great coaching on the defensive side of the ball? Because – you alluded to it, like, everyone doesn't receive the same caliber of coaching. So in your mind, what is good coaching on the defensive side?
Well, I think, you know, you start from the coaches down. I think it's a clear and concise message on what is this defense. If we're going to play cover three, this is what McDee did such a good job with. These are our run blitzes. These are our pass blitzes. This is what we're going to do on third down. And I'm not going to throw curveballs at you. So you guys are going to know what to expect. And then, you know, in your pass coverage stuff, these are our rules and this is how we're going to attack people. And then this is what we expect from you guys. I think so. When you talk about scheme, I think the player needs to understand what you expect from them. And you have to make sure that you're not throwing change ups at guys. So when you have your third down menu, we're not calling that stuff early in first and second down unless the game situation dictates that. But I think that's when I think guys have to understand what's expected of them. And then I think the technique and the positioning is huge. I think that's one thing that they do really well in New England is they game plan extremely well. I think those guys are very educated on what to expect. I thought that's what we did a really good job in Carolina with was we were pretty simple on defense. We knew what we were doing, but we also were very well prepared. So 11 personnel, 3x1, these are their top runs, like boom, boom, boom. 2x2, it's boom, boom, boom. Third and long, 7+, this is what you're going to get. And then once you get in the game, it's just how quickly can you recall what you've gone over during the week. So you install stuff in OTAs, training camp during the week. Okay, we're playing quarters on 3rd and 7. This is how we play quarters from April. Boom, now I know how to play quarters. And then you slip into what have we been prepped on during the week. And then you always fall back on your technique. So I think if guys know what to expect from your playbook, they know what to expect from the team that you're playing and they understand their technique, I think that's where teams are really able to have a ton of success.
One of the things I'm curious about, and we'll move on away from the Patriots here in a minute, but it's fascinating to get your take on this. How important is it that everybody on the defense know the roles of all 11 spots? Because when we were going back through and looking at them a couple weeks ago, you had Adrian Phillips and Kyle Duggar have spent like 10% of their snaps at 5 different positions. So they're moving those guys. I mean, I think they're that role in that position, it's the same assignment, but these guys are able to bounce around into different positions because it feels like they have kind of a broad understanding what the whole thing looks like.
Well, I think, you know, when I first got to Carolina, my first year was, what am I doing? What is my job? All right, in cover 3, I'm here in quarters. I got this. I set the front this way. And I would get hit on plays and I didn't understand why. And as time went on, the coach was like, this is why you got hit here. And this is why you need to understand where different people are going to be. Because I think the more you understand the whole defense, the more you understand where I'm stressed, where I'm safe, when I can take chances on things. You know, if you're looking at, especially in man coverage, right? I was really poor in man coverage early in my career. And a lot, I mean, I wasn't great at it in general. But if you're playing man coverage and you've got a whole player, if you're playing too high, you've got where is your help? I don't have any help in the middle of the field. I got help over the top and outside. So that's where I'm going to push guys. That's where I'm going to feel safe. That's where I know if I get beat, that's where I can get beat to. So I think the more you can understand what's going on your defensive scheme, the more you can take chances, especially really in the run game, I think, especially in angles. So like, I think one thing that we did a really good job in Carolina were edges. Mm-hmm. So the outside guys, normally the corners, they're setting edges and everybody's inside out to the ball, right? And that job for those corners is difficult because all they got to do is sit out there and constrict an edge and they're not making a lot of plays on the ball. And I think that'd be super frustrating as a corner. You do all the work, you push the ball back in and somebody else makes a tackle. And I thought we did a really good job, especially on the edges, of those guys staying disciplined and doing that and letting everybody else just run to the ball. Because if I'm tracking an inside hip of a ball carry on an outside play and I know, and I see the edge, I know that ball at some point has to cut up. But the moment that guy sneaks his head in, that ball bounces, my angle is bad because I was expecting it to cut up inside. So that's the important part, not only for those guys, but also for backers in general. I got to do the same thing. If I get a pulling guy around the corner, my job is to keep outside leverage. Then I keep outside leverage and let Thomas come in and clean the ball up or Shaq, whoever the other linebacker was. So it's not about making the play on the ball. It's about doing your job. And I think the best defenses in the NFL, they all do the same thing.
You know, look, it's funny because the league has continued to shift, particularly at your position at linebacker. So now we look at a guy like a Michael Parsons who comes in the league as a linebacker, but then we're seeing him play heavy snaps off the edges. When you look at a guy, you think about someone who has that kind of tool set. How difficult is it to go from playing inside to outside in today's game?
Well, I think, you know, Mike is a stud, right? I think he's like 8.5 sacks already this year. Yeah. And I think that'd be very difficult for an offense to play against, right? You don't know what are you going to count him. You're going to count him as a big, you're going to count him as an off the ball guy. That's kind of some of the stuff we had to figure out when we played New Orleans with like guys like Taysom Hill. Like, what do we count him? Is he a receiver? Do we count him as a running back? Do we count him as a tight end? But I think, you know, you look at those guys that can play on the ball, off the ball. Thomas did that a little bit for us in Carolina, and he was always jacked when he had an opportunity to rush off the edge, because it was like, hey, TD, like, you're an off the edge rusher. Go get the quarterback. These are your opportunities, inside, outside moves. But Micah's special in the sense of that size that he has and his ability to almost play that defensive end in a stand-up role is unique. But I think that's kind of where the league's trending now, in the sense of these guys that can play off the ball, but then you can morph into a five down look in a sub package, and you're not losing any athletic ability if he has to walk out on the slot. So I think it's, if you have a guy like that, it's a big time luxury.
That's fascinating. We were talking about the other day. I was saying, man, I know if I'm Micah Parsons and you look at the franchise tag numbers for an off the ball linebacker versus an edge, you're a pass rusher, right? That's well, what you're going to be.
You know what I think is really funny is like all these guys wearing these single digit numbers. So they want to wear a single digit number. But then if you wear a single digit number, that classifies you automatically as an outside linebacker. So when you go to the table and be like, well, I played most of my snaps at DN, it's like, well, no, you just said you were an outside linebacker in the preseason and you switched your number. So like, you got to be careful if you're going to say, I'd rather be in the 90s and get the DN tag than be a number 9 and get the outside linebacker tag.
Yeah, no, you can have the posters, the cool posters with the single digits. I'll take the paychecks. Paychecks are cooler than posters. Hey, Luke, one of the things we've seen this year, I think it's really starting to spread. We're kind of in a lot of a too high right now, a lot of shell coverage we're seeing, and kind of just that emphasis on limiting explosives. The, you know, a lot of people say kind of the bend but don't break style of defense. What's your take on that? And what was it like playing, if you're as a player, to be playing in maybe a little bit more, I would say, more conservative defense and more of an attacking group?
Yeah, so I thought we were primarily a quarters team, right? And then a little bit of two sprinkled in. So we got that shell, but we got it more in the sense of quarters. And I loved it. I loved it in the pass game because underneath, you know, your three inside guys are matching. So all twos and threes are all matched. And I felt like I could play aggressively on tight ends and aggressively on backs out of the backfield. And we had good matchups with Thomas on tight ends. And we always felt good about our nickel in the slot. And it allows those guys to play a little bit more aggressively, because if they get any kind of a vertical concept, they're protected over the top. And I think the league's transitioning, I think, to more passing. And that's kind of what Tampa did in the Super Bowl last year, was keep everything in front, let the team run the ball. And then once you get into the red zone, like, we've got to be really good and tighten up in the red zone and create and kick field goals. And it makes a lot of sense. And, but I think the key to playing that split safety look is you got to be able to stop the run when you need to stop the run. Like, and if you're on first down and you show split safety and you check run, you got to be able to tackle it for 4 yards, right? If you give up 5, 6, 7, then you're kind of defeating the point of playing split safety, because it's 2nd and 3, right? So I think if you can limit the run game to 4 yards on first down, if you're playing 2 or a deep 4 or something, I think you count it kind of as a win.
I like that. So you can actually put a number on that, Buck. So you're kind of just saying that's kind of the target number. Cause you see it every week and I'm like, okay, I get it. You want to give up explosives, but when it's 2nd and 2, man, you're putting yourself in a bad spot. But that 4 yard number, I think, is fascinating.
Yeah. 2nd and 2 is so scary for a defense, because it can be either it's a run the ball or a short pass or it's a shot. And even if they don't complete anything, it's 3rd and 2 and you're still, you got to play man or zone or pressure or something.
You know, look, I'm going to have you put on your coaching hat now. So the league has a bunch of young quarterbacks, right? And so if you could craft a plan against a young quarterback, he can be mobile or not, what do you believe are some of the difficult things that young quarterbacks have to face? And what would be some of the things that you want to put in your game plan?
Well, I think you got to show them different looks, right? It's super cliche and easy to talk about, but a lot of these young guys that come in, they're all smart. They all understand football. They understand split safety versus single high. But I think you got to see how quickly they can process post snap, right? And so if you show split safety and you rotate down, or you show single high and rotate to 2, I think you can't make stuff look easy for them. And you also can't give them easy throws over the middle. I think that's when guys start really rolling, is when they can complete balls over the middle for 10, 12, 14 yards. And then they start getting in the rhythm a little bit. That's what I would try to do. And I would try to push the pocket and make them uncomfortable up front. That's one thing that we always talked about. And I think it's true. These guys, if you can muddy the middle of the offensive line and so they can't step up in that pocket, I think it makes their life difficult and makes your job easy, especially for those inside guys. Like, look, this is what we're looking for. We're going to game plan heavy inside push on third down. We're going to limit throws over the middle, and we're going to make him earn it. I mean, if he's hitting 15, 16 yard outs and he's hitting deep comebacks on the other side of the field, you kind of have to live with that. But if you can make it hard for him and not give him easy stuff, you can't just line up and cover three and say, well, he's a young guy, he's not going to complete the ball. Most of these guys can do that. But if you show split safety and then you rotate down to three and then you show man and you play press bail and, you know, get into three, it just, the more you can change these looks up for the guys, the better, more success you're going to have. Because I think it's, these guys are so used to seeing stuff in college, like come out middle closed, look over to the sideline, get a play change from the quarterback, and then it's a predetermined throw. So I think if you can get to the point where it's difficult for them, their life's not easy, you get inside push and they can't throw the ball over the middle with success, I think you can have some good luck.
So I'm going to take what you just said and flip it over to the other side and think about it from a team building perspective. So let's say you're bringing in a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, and you want to get him up and established. We've always talked about like the three P's, right? You've got to have a good play caller. You got to have protection. You got to have playmakers. But listen to you talk about, you know, interior pressure and taking away easy throws. Like, to me, I'm thinking, like, if we narrow that down, if you're going to roster build around a young quarterback, it would seem to be having a really strong interior three along your offensive line. And then, you know, whether it's a tight end or a slot, but somebody who can give you easy baked in completions would be kind of a key component to make a young quarterback comfortable. Would that be on target?
I think so. I think the inside of that offensive line is super important. I mean, when we had success in Carolina, we always had Ryan. You know, Ryan was a stud. He could get everybody lined up. And that was the one thing that was difficult within our division, was the centers were so good. You know, Drew had Max Unger for the latter part of my career. And then, you know, they got Ryan Jensen down in Tampa, and then Alex Mack was in Atlanta. So I think if you're a young quarterback, I think the best thing that can happen for you is you feel protected and you have an easy outlet. And however you want to do that on the offensive line is I think super important. And if you can get a guy like Greg could just get open. He could wherever the ball was, he could catch it, but he could uncover, he could get open. He was smart. He was an easy guy to throw the ball to. So, you know, if I was a young quarterback, I wouldn't want to get hit, and I want to be able to get the ball out quickly to a guy that I know could get open and catch the ball. So that's, I would agree with you on that.
You know, it's funny because Luke, I'm sure you heard this from your coaches. They always talk about championship defenses are strong right down the middle. So when you think about some of the defenses that you played on, what were the key components from a personnel standpoint that enabled you guys to be a great defense?
So my rookie year, I thought we had guys that were really good up front. I'd never played with guys like that were that big and athletic and strong. And I was like, these guys are awesome. And then going into my second year, we drafted Star Lotulelei. He plays with Buffalo now. He's a first round pick. He was a stud. And then Kawan Short was, they kind of both played, you know, the shade and the three. And then we had Dwan Edwards, which he was in Buffalo and
Baltimore. We drafted him in Baltimore when I was there.
He was unbelievable. He was just a great older guy that just understood football, right? He could play three inside, outside. He could do everything. And then we had Charles Johnson and Greg Hardy when I first got there. And then we drafted a few other guys. We had Pep when I was there. And I just know as a linebacker, if your front four guys are really good, not only can they rush the passer, but they make getting to the second level super difficult. And especially back when I got in, a lot of it was run the ball, throw play action off of it. And our defense was so good right up the middle with those front four guys that everybody's job after that was easier. And I thought that's how we built our team, was edge rushers, inside big guys that could affect the game at two levels, both run and pass. And then Thomas and I were just kind of able to hang back there and just run around. It was super easy. I mean, my first few years, we just hung in there and run around, and Star and KK and Dwan and all those guys just dominated up front.
Oh, that's fantastic. I want to go back to the coaching thing that, that Bucky was talking to you about a little while ago. Did you notice a difference from when you started in the league to when you left about, you know, how it was different coaching you're receiving, you know, in terms of just the younger guys coming in, maybe some of the old school coaching was not as, as prevalent as when you started. Was there a change at all during your career?
I think I was very fortunate with the guys that I had in Carolina. You know, you look when I was there, it was, you know, Sean McDermott, Steve Wilkes, Al Holcomb, Eric Washington. Right. And we had Sam Mills and a couple other guys that were in there. And then I had Steve Russ. He was my linebacker coach after Al was there. And my rookie year, we had a guy named Warren Beelen, and they were great teachers. They understood the game, but they taught really well. I wouldn't say they're necessarily old school guys, but they understood how to talk to guys. They understood the relationship side of football. So there wasn't a ton of yelling and screaming and dog cussing and belittling guys. It was more of like, this is what we want to do. This is how we're going to do it. I'm going to teach you and put you in the best position to succeed. And I think we always had older guys that when maybe the coach's message didn't get through to the players, each guy, every room had a dude that could really pull the young guy aside and be like, hey, this is what he means. And maybe it didn't sound like that, but this is what he means. And I was fortunate, I think, in my situation in Carolina from Ron Rivera all the way down, that we had great teachers and great people and people that value the relationship side of sports and football in general. So I don't think there was a ton of like the dog cussing and, you know, I don't know how it is everywhere else, but we were very fortunate.
You know, look, it's funny because I'm listening to you and you talk about the relationships. And one of the things that I've learned from great coaches is that the team is always better when it's player driven. And on great defenses, it appears to be that the standard is upheld by the players and it's not necessarily about the coaches. So talk about the peer pressure that leaders can put on other guys to make sure that everyone is playing and performing to the standard.
Well, I think, you know, you look at our defense from when I was there, the guy that was always there was Thomas, right? And Thomas set the standard. He set the tone. And he was so competitive that he could challenge guys to be better without yelling at him. And it was such a unique trait that he had, and he practiced so hard. And so it's not like he'd come to the sideline during practice and get on a guy about, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And the guy looking at him be like, well, you're not doing it either. It was, you saw Thomas on tape doing it and you're like, wow, if Thomas is doing it and he's been in the league for however many years, like I might as well do it. And then I think what was really good for us was we had, so you look in the DB room, we had a guy named Quentin Michael, and then we had Roman Harper, and then we had Kirk Coleman, and then we had Mike Adams and Eric Reed. And you look at all those guys, they're all the same dude, smart, intelligent, effort, tough, and no one practiced harder or was tougher than them. So it's not like if you're in that room and you're a young guy and you're being lazy and one of those guys gets on you, it's not like, well, you're not doing it. It's like, well, they watch you in practice and they're like, wow, like he's getting on me for it. And I'm not practicing as hard as he is. And he's been in the league for 10 years. Like I might as well do it. And the same thing up front with, Charles Johnson was a D end, Dwan Edwards, KK and Star, like those guys, you didn't need to say anything to those guys because they just did it the right way. And all the young guys, when they came in, you looked at those older guys and it was just expected. And there wasn't really a choice. There wasn't really an argument. It was, this is how we do things. This is how we expect you to do it. And this is why we do it. And then it shows up in the game. And I think that's where the coaches did a really good job is something would show up in a game and they would maybe a run got out and it was 30 yards down the field and we stunk on defense. But one of the D linemen ran and chased him all the way down and tackled him 30 yards down the field. They'll coach it and say, hey, you know, you got to be in your gap. You got to do this. You got to do that. But look at this guy. Look at Kyle Love. He ran all the way down the field, tackle this guy, and then we get off the field with a punt or a turnover or a field goal instead of a touchdown. I think the coaches expected us to do things the right way, but they did a really good job of highlighting it when we did it. And I think that gives guys a lot of ownership to the fact that like what I'm doing is being seen.
It's amazing. You can watch some teams have that and others don't. I mean, you just in what you just said, just watch the Biggs chase And some teams you'll see it, and other teams they'll take that play off. I think it says a lot about your culture and about your overall defense.
Yeah.
One of the things we were talking about the other day, Luke, was if you look at like the top eight rushers, I think was coming into last week, six of the eight were 220 plus pound guys. Mm-hmm. So it, where the league kind of trended more towards the smaller, you know, pass catching backs, there's kind of a little bit of a resurgence of these bigger physical guys. What was that like as a linebacker? Maybe as you get into the fourth quarter and you're dealing with a back that's a bigger back.
I think they're just a pain, man. Like they're just a pain in the butt, you know. Like fortunately for us, we had Stu, right? So we kind of kind of had that guy, and I got to watch it. But when you play bigger backs, like, you know, obviously everybody wants to talk about Derrick Henry and what he does, and Jonathan Taylor looks to me like a big back, or Leonard Fournette down in Tampa. Man. Those guys are just big and strong and physical. I mean, and they're hard to tackle. Marshawn was like that. And you just got to hit him, man. Like, it, you know, the game goes on and it's like, man, like it's especially you get in the 4 minute situations. It's like, they're going to run power. They're going to run bounce. They're going to run wide zone. And you got to go smack that guy, 'cause you know, it's coming. He knows it's coming. And if you're not locked in, it can wear on you a little bit, because those guys, I think those running backs just love getting that ball at the end of the game. Like, time for me to show up. And but you just got to play, man. And that's, at the end of the day, you got to think, maybe if you're tired, you got to think that guy's played a lot of snaps too and he's tired. And it was, I enjoyed that part of the game, but those guys, man, I'd rather hit a guy that's 200 pounds than 240. So it's pretty straightforward.
Well, you and DJ are kind of taking me to where I want. Like, I think there's a notion where football has changed and it's become a little more of a finesse game with all the throwing. But Luke, you've been in enough playoff games to know that when you get in the postseason, it's a different animal. Can you talk about like just the physicality and urgency that is necessary to be a championship team? At the end of the day, how physical the game has to be if you want to hoist the trophy?
Well, I think, you know, at the end of the season, every play matters. You know, in the middle of the season, you know, a couple plays here and there, it might not be a huge deal. Obviously, they're super important, but if you can run the ball in the playoffs and play physical and take pressure off the quarterback and just control the ball, I think that's how you win. And, you know, teams that are able to do that have had a lot of success. I think New England's a lot like that. Tampa was able to run the ball when they wanted to. I think that's the thing with the run game, is you got to be able to run the ball when you want to and when you have to. If you can run the ball and get 6 yards on first down every third or fourth play, you might have a good average at the end of the game. But in the playoffs, I think you need to be able to run the ball when you have to and when you want to. And I think that ultimately comes down to a mindset and a set of physical guys up front that want to block, and a running back that's not afraid to pound the ball. And then on the defensive side of the ball, it doesn't matter if it's split safety, single high, you're pressuring. You got to stop the run, because then that makes teams one dimensional. And then your guys in the edge get all excited because they can pin their ears back and rush. But the physical side of the game shows up in, especially December and January, especially in the playoffs, obviously, when the ability to run the ball, I think, is more important. You got to be able to run it when you want to and when you have to, and you got to stop it the same way.
Physical football. I was talking to a coach the other day, Luke, who said they had just played a team and they had some success against them, because when they went back and kind of looked at what had gotten them in previous weeks defensively, it was said this team, like they kind of almost scrapped their whole offense and basically just ran everything that had gotten us in the previous 3 or 4 weeks. It's like, yeah, well, we made the corrections. Like, we've made the corrections. And it was like, oh, here comes this. And this is from the game 2 weeks ago. This is from last week. How important is it you guys kind of defensively learn from maybe what you got hit on over the season, knowing that these coordinators are going to give it to you again?
We played, I don't remember what year it was, but we something happened to us early in the season, right? It was a tight end throwback play, and it scored as like a 45-yard touchdown, and it was super embarrassing because the guy was wide open. And then we got it the next week, and they scored again. And we're like, gosh, we're terrible. And then it started showing up in practice every week and every week and every week, once or twice, so probably 2 or 3 times a week. Yeah. And then by the end of the season, we got it 3 or 4 more times, and we had it taken care of, because it was such a point of emphasis that, you know, it was, this guy lines up here, this is the look, this is the action, the post-snap action, and this is where he's going to end up. And we started getting it later in the season, and it was, we knocked it out, right? But you know, if I'm an offensive coordinator, I'm watching a game and I see teams have success consistently on a certain concept or scheme idea, I'm probably going to throw that in there too. So, I mean, it makes sense. I think, you know, we always talked about the league as a copycat league. And the funny thing is we got another situation. We played Cleveland in 2018, and they scored, they popped a long run on like some crack toss shovel pass to Jarvis Landry. And then they got 640 yards on it. And then they ran it again later in the game for like a touchdown or 2-point conversion. And then we got it later in the season two other times. And now I've seen it happen in a league a bunch since then. So it's like everybody sees a play and like, I like that play, I'm going to put it in. But as you begin to practice stuff more and more often, you just get used to those oddities.
You know, it's funny because what you mentioned is like the copycat nature of the league. And I feel like the league trends like that offensively and defensively. Like one year, Tampa 2 becomes the in vogue thing. So everyone spends all offseason doing those things. Luke, what's the danger in doing that kind of stuff, though? Kind of morphing to what's the trendy thing as opposed to kind of sticking to what's your identity on the defensive side of the ball?
I think you nailed it right there. Like, stick to what you're good at and stick to what you've installed since day one, right? Obviously, you can have some stuff and change some things up, but if you installed it in OTAs and you thought about it all offseason as a coach, then I think you feel pretty good about what you put in on the defensive side of the ball. So this is how we're going to play cover three. This is how we're going to play four. We're going to switch up the split safety and play two every once in a while, and these are going to be our man and zone pressures. And this is what we're good at, and I'm going to coach off that. And I thought that's one thing that we did well for a long time in Carolina was, this is what we are. We're not going to change who we are on a week-to-week basis. We might change how we play some things, but I'm a big fan of, especially on the defensive side of the ball, take pride in what you do, know what you are, and just coach it up. So if you get a weird look during practice or you watch something on tape that's strange from the team you're playing, make sure that you go over it in all your 3-4-2, your zone pressures, and on third down. And if you can coach it and you feel good about your scheme and your system and your coaches and their ability to coach, I just like staying with what we got.
Look, I'm curious, Luke, at this point in time in the year, you know, it's a 17-game season for the first time. Do you remember anything kind of in that last quarter of your rookie season, or maybe some advice you gave to rookies as they were kind of coming down the home stretch here of a long season?
I just remember getting to right now, Thanksgiving, and you look at the schedule and there's like 5 or 6 games left and you're like, oh my gosh, like I should be done, or I should be getting ready for a bowl game. I should have 3 or 4 weeks off where I get a week off and then we have bowl practice. And I think that the thing, especially as a young guy, that it's not so much the physical toll, but it's the mental toll of the season, right? You're in it all the time, right? You're there early in the morning, you get out in the afternoon and you're there every day. And it's always something new, right? New scheme on the offensive side of the ball, new install, you're at practice, and it just mentally, it just wears on you. So I think for me, one thing that helped me, all these older guys that talked to me about that going into my rookie year, like, you need to get on a schedule and you need to sleep and you need to eat well. Mm-hmm. If you can get on the schedule, the season will just roll by, and then you just kind of have to lock in once December hits, because those are the games that really matter. Especially my first year, we didn't go to playoffs, but my second year, we were in a playoff push with New Orleans to win the division and get a first round bye. And so you didn't really have a choice but to really lock in. But my rookie year, we weren't going to the playoffs, and it's like, man, like, the season is, it's long. I'm usually done by now. I've got 5 more games. You know, it's a grind mentally, I think, more than physically, especially when I was a young guy.
So now you're head coach, 17 game season, because it's longer. How do you navigate it differently than you would under the normal circumstances that you played in with a 16-game season? Because the one game doesn't seem like a lot, but it is a little different deal. How would you manage it at the end of the year if you were head coach?
Well, I think the important thing is the recovery, the physical aspect, the recovery aspect of how you schedule practice and when you give guys days off. And I think with all the analytics and all these GPS numbers and that all these coaches have and all these teams have, I think they can put a plan together that allows guys to recover and then be ready to go on Sunday. Because you look at the week, right? The only thing that really matters is how good do you feel on Sunday? So if I'm a coach, I'm working back from there and understanding like, all right, I got to install this, and this, but my days to recover are here and here, especially for an older team. How well, how well can they recover and how good can they feel going into that game on Sunday? And I think that's where that extra game really comes into play, is how good do they feel physically? And I thought, you know, when we went to the Super Bowl, I felt like we were super healthy. You guys had great energy. You guys felt really good, and they were healthy and energized going into that game. So I think that 17th game just adds another little bit of a different dimension. But I think if you can jump on it early in the season and give guys built-in time to recover, I think that's where you can have a benefit.
Well, man, you've been so generous with your time. Catching up with you again, this has just been a blast. I've got to leave you here. The last question, a scouting question, is two scouts here. We're always looking for a little scouting nugget. So you've been on all these hunting trips. I need to know, scouting-wise, like, what's at the top of the board? What's at the top of your draft board? Which hunting trip is up there?
So I did a trip with my dad in Montana for elk. That was a lot of fun. We bow hunted it, and we had success. But I love to hunt whitetail, and I've been getting my butt whooped the last few years with the whitetail. So that's on the list right now. I gotta figure it out. I gotta crack the code of what it takes to get on some big whitetails. I've had some close encounters. I've seen some good looking deer, but I just haven't had the opportunity to close the deal yet. So that's hopefully next time I chat with you guys, I can report some good news.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that's so good. Hey, Luke, you are the best, man. It's so generous with your time, and we always end up taking pages and notes here. It's great stuff, man. We appreciate you.
Cool. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Buck, once again, can't thank Luke enough. Very generous with his time. Kept him a long time there, but so much insight. The pages full of notes here. What struck you as the most interesting thing to come out of that conversation?
Man, so many notes. Couple of things. I think the way he talked about building a championship level defense, where he focused on the front, I thought his comments on setting the edges in terms of playing great defense, how the corners at Carolina did a great job setting the edges so he could just kind of run and flow. And then I just think his insight on coaching, and he kept coming back to the same point on whatever you put in the off season, you need to continue to trust and rely on that. And he was very detailed and specific about those things over and over and over again, where he talked about the reps and knowing the comfort level, knowing who you are, and not doing what we call a lot of last minute changes in the middle of the year. I think that's critical, because for someone who I would regard as a high IQ player to say that I want comfort, structure, consistency, to me, that's saying everything. Because if he is asking for that, imagine what those guys who don't have some of those same capabilities, what they need to be able to be successful and flourish.
I was thinking of BB and MTS. So Bill Belichick, Do Your Job, right? Famously, you have the documentary with that title. You see him say that every single week on the sideline there with the Patriots. So you've got the Bill Belichick, Do Your Job, but then you've got the Move the Sticks motto of Know Your Formula.
Yeah.
I mean, is that not what it is? Like, know who you are, what you're about, and stick to that.
Yeah, know who you are, know what you're about. Don't deviate. Don't try and get off the rails. When he talked about the cute stuff, the trendy stuff, he's like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But you got to know who you are and who you are, what you have, and all those other things. And I think it was really great to hear, because, like, we always talk about the game changing, but really it remains the same. And I think Luke was able to give some perspective on, even though the game evolves, it still comes down to a couple of things. In terms of how you play schematically, but it's still about the urgency and effort that you bring, the overall physicality, and just kind of understanding how you have to fit and how you have to ramp it up when it gets late in the season.
I also love the conversation. You brought up a great question about how do you attack these young quarterbacks and make them uncomfortable. And he talked about how you change looks and just you've got to get some interior pressure. We flipped it around, and then he was excellent on talking about maybe how you would try and build around a young quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I've ever thought of it in those terms, but because we've always said, right, you know, play callers, playmakers, and protection. But I think the protection part, let's narrow that down. You know what? First round picks, high price free agents, that interior three, we are going to create a wall with that interior three. So many of these quarterbacks coming to the league are so athletic anyways. You get a little heat off the edge. You've got an issue with a tackle. You can chip. You can use a tight end. You can help those guys out. You got no answers when your interior three aren't good. And that's a young quarterback's kryptonite. You got no shot.
Yeah, it's funny. I believe it might be all quarterbacks' kryptonite. Going back to my time in Kansas City, I had a chance to play for Marty Schottenheimer, but the defense coordinator at the time was the late Gunther Cunningham. And yeah. Gunther used to drop nuggets all the time about attacking the quarterback because we were a heavy pressure team, real blitz heavy. We're coming after him. He said, you know, depending on the style of quarterback, he said, you need to blitz him right up the gut so they can see it as well as feel it. When you're playing a guy that is more of an immobile quarterback like a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, you want to hit them right in the A-gaps so they can feel that pressure on them. Coming off the edges and stuff is fine, but the great quarterbacks, the ball is out before you ever get there. But coming up the middle, like Luke is talking about, being able to have pressure up the middle and being able to have a fortress in the middle of the pocket for the quarterback to throw comfortably, that's really what's about. And so draft times, until recently when we talk about Quentin Nelson, we always kind of dismiss the importance of guards and centers and, oh, we can find any of those guys. But DJ, when you start looking at some of the top teams, the top offensive teams, mm-hmm. take a look at who they have on the interior. Those positions inside,
just look at the rookie quarterbacks. Look at the rookie quarterbacks and compare the interior three. So we could really say interior three and easy completions. Yeah. You have a good interior three, and you have guys that give you baked in easy completions. He talked about the middle tight of the end. Field being able to yeah. do that. So, and you see, you know, Mac Jones works a lot to the perimeter with safe throws. And then as you get more comfortable, you're going to get easy baked in completions with the tight ends they went and paid. So it's just fascinating to kind of look at these different teams and how they're, you know, connected. The Jags, I wouldn't say their interior mm-hmm. three or easy completions are a big part mm-hmm. of what they do. The Jets, you know, I like Elijah Vera Tucker, but they need a center and a guard to put next to them. They don't really have a tight end right now. I think Elijah Moore is going to be able to give them some of those easy completions from the slot. You've seen some of that recently. The Bears, I don't know that there's a bunch of easy completions, and I know the interior three is not great. You kind of go all the way through kind of go all the way down through the list here. It's fascinating to look at.
Yeah, build it. You know, we've always been big proponents of building in the trenches on both sides of the ball. I think our experiences from the places that we've worked for and been around and our overall philosophies and team building kind of marry to O-line and D-line. You got to be big and strong in the trenches. But even now, I think we're scoring towards more of an inside-out build. Build it inside. Make sure that you're solid right inside and then kind of work your way out to the edges to make sure you're able to get it done. And we're seeing on both sides, DJ, I just have this vision of the Cowboys game and how impactful Chris Jones was as a defensive tackle. And even though the Cowboys had an all-pro in Zach Martin, he had a long day dealing with somebody on the inside. And to me, Dak Prescott played arguably his worst game of the season for sure, and one of the worst of his career in terms of just being uncomfortable. We can talk about the guys not being available on the outside, but it was a constant and persistent pressure that Chris Jones was able to provide that completely wrecked the game plan and disrupted his rhythm. I think there's some lessons to be learned from that and also from what Luke was able to talk about.
Yeah, man, just we could go on and go through each of his answers because it was fascinating. It was great stuff. I hope you guys have enjoyed that conversation as much as we did having it, and we'll have him on again soon. We get an update on his hunting trips and see if he was able to get the whitetail. By the way, Truth Serum, if you'd have told me whitetail was a fish, I would have bought it. No clue. Not.
I was guessing because of the hunting.
Yeah.
Because of the hunting. I was like, whitetail, the only animal that I know with a whitetail, that would be kind of like, they'll be like Bambi, maybe it's just that. Like that's the only thing I can think of. I can't think of anything else. Like, it's not a rabbit. It wouldn't be Thumper. He's not going after Thumper, right?
Thumper. Yeah. Like, that's so
that's
good,
the
man.
That's the only thing that I could think of.
Yeah. No, we both played it off like we knew what we were talking about, man. We both played it off well.
Yeah, good for you for playing along. And hey, what you do is you just nod your head. Yeah.
I'm with
like,
you, man.
I like to get that elk too. Yeah, like, hey, like, just pop an elk. Like, no interest, dude. Like, hey, like that one. I didn't get the memo on that one. I missed that one. The hunting rage.
Or whatever. I know.
Fish,
I know.
Maybe.
Maybe
I could try a little bit, but
yeah, I think I probably. Yeah. Yeah, I think fishing would probably be more my jam. Let's maybe give it a try here. Maybe try a little hunting trip and a little fishing trip and see if either one of them work. I haven't really done much of either. But anyways, hey, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap this thing up. All right, Buck, this was a fun one, man. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I mean, I think it was great. And I think, DJ, anytime we have an opportunity to talk to a player with that kind of insight and perspective, I think it makes us all smarter, right? I just being able to really have a long, lengthy conversation with a guy who's one of the best at his position, who had great experiences on great teams, and to be able to share that, to me, man, you talk about the pages of notes. I learned a lot in that conversation about not just defensive football, but all things football. I know Luke has talked about kind of resetting and understanding the fall, but man, that kind of knowledge, to me, that has to be shared in between the lines. And I can see where he would be a great coach at whatever level he elected to do it, if he decides that coaching is in his blood.
No doubt. Getting a chance to enjoy this season of life, but I have a feeling that his football book is not finished yet. There's more to come there. He has more to give to the sport. Just a phenomenal dude. So thanks again to Luke Kuechly for his generosity with his time today. Great conversation. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.